Well, I think it is 11 o'clock, so if we could get started here. It's a little bit scattered. I don't know how y'all feel, if it's a comfort to you to be in the back corner a little bit, but since we haven't filled up, it can seem a bit far away for me, but whatever you would like. I brought in with me some scraps of paper and some hymnals to write on, some writing utensils, if anyone came without them. There will be a few brainstorming, kind of creative writing moments in the session, not a formal assignment of any kind, but a place for you to jot some notes and ideas. For yesterday's session that I led, we talked about names. We talked about the importance of our names, what's at stake as we choose our names, either to go with what was given us or to choose to go by something other than our given names. And we talked a little bit about the ways in which the names of objects and things, you know, the words that we have, everything about language, they're symbols for an idea or a thing that we are trying to identify and understand. And it's important for us to try to be as accurate as possible in understanding what is what. You know, we teach young children, this is that, and this is that, and these are those, and, you know, so that we are all working with the same ideas a little bit. But language and naming does a certain job of separation sometimes, perhaps all the time. And there is, of course, much good in the uniqueness of a self and of the different objects that are around us, but I think we are also challenged by divisions among us, among people, the kinds of ways that we experience our difference from other parts of the world around us. You know, we are not rocks or snakes or mosquitoes or any of those things, but of course we sort of know intellectually that we are part of this natural world and have relationships to things, but sometimes it's hard to figure out how to understand those relationships and what we're a part of, even when we are distinct. My scheme for today is to read some selections from Walt Whitman's long-ish poem, Song of Myself. Curious how many of you know this poem. Three, four, five of you? Okay, not quite half. And there were a few sort of maybe knew it or know of it. Walt Whitman is probably a name that most of us have heard, a very famous 19th century American poet. His dates are from 1819 to 1892, for most of the 19th century in the U.S., and of course, this was a century of great change, westward movement, industrialization, the America that he, of which he was a part, was quite a growing organism, I guess. And to be an American was to be very explicitly from a lot of different places. He was an adult living and writing this poem prior to the Civil War, so there were divisions of race in the country, but also fairly explicit divisions of class and among European ethnic identities still, in a way that over the course of the century, it seems to me that many people of European descent in coming to the United States chose to trade in a unique ethnic identity in order to take on whiteness as opposed to blackness. You enter a country where there's a legalized slave, second-class citizen category, and you know, it becomes a little easier to shed the specificity of the Italian, the Irish, the whatever it is, the Norwegian, the Swedes. We all set those aside, right? And we decide that we're Scandinavian and that we can talk to one another. But Walt Whitman, it's a very curious poet. He's been referred to as the father of free verse. If you've studied any kind of literary history, you might know that most older poetry is in rhyme schemes and regular meter. The reasons for poems to be in iambic pentameter, for example, are because poetry came out of an oral tradition. It's much easier to remember and memorize poems that are in regular meters and rhymes. And so all of the Homer's epics and the original English language epic Beowulf, these are all poems that are written in regular metric forms. This didn't really change until almost the 20th century. Whitman was one of the few writers in the 19th century who set aside meter and rhyme scheme and started writing in this open form where he draws on maybe patterns, rhythms, catalogs, certain kinds of things that organized his work. But if you look at his poems on a page, you know, the lines are all different lengths and there are spaces wherever he wants them. You know, the definition of open form or free verse, where you can make those line breaks wherever you want and use the language different kinds of ways. A few more pieces of information about Whitman. He was born on Long Island. He was, I think, a fourth generation New Yorker. So his family went way back. He had roots there in a way that a lot of people are still showing up not having any roots at all in the country. He was a teacher for a while. He worked for the government for a while. He volunteered as a nurse during the Civil War. He was sort of a jack of all trades. He was a journalist for a while for a New York paper. He published maybe the most famous work of poetry from the American 19th century, Leaves of Grass. It was published in 1855. It was a collection that he self-published. The Song of Myself is a shorter poem that was published in Leaves of Grass. And the leaves and the grass are sort of a common image throughout this entire text. He was fairly taken with grass and leaves, and the idea of leaves as the leaves of a book as well, or as the pages of our life. You know, he sort of played with these layers of meaning with that symbol. Whitman wrote Leaves of Grass to be a new American epic. He was intentional about making it be a work of poetry that was all-encompassing, that was somehow broad. He was interested in there being something called an American identity that was generalized, or dare I say universal. And so, you know, he was one of the figures in our history, in literary history, to imagine us as this mass that had more in common than less, this group that needed to understand that we belonged to one another in a certain kind of way. And that was somewhat of a new idea, sort of a challenging idea, given the historical context he was living in. Let's see, I had a note here about Song of Myself. So first published in 1855, but Whitman worked and reworked it over the course of his lifetime, as many writers do with pieces that are sort of their main baby. You know, you don't necessarily feel done with it, and you keep working with it. And of course, since Song of Myself, by its title, is intended to be a hymn to him. He was growing and aging and having experiences, and his ideas shifted over time. And so there are a number of different drafts of this that produced over his lifetime. The first version of Song of Myself, I didn't have a title. He just was writing this thing and produced it. The second version he titled Walt Whitman. And then in a third draft, he called it Poem of Walt Whitman, an American. And it was one of the latest versions near the end of his life that he ended up calling it by the name that sort of school children grew up knowing it as, this Song of Myself. I guess I imagined that I would kind of intersperse talking about this poem, reading some excerpts of it, inviting comments, ideas, questions as we go, and then have a couple little exercises that I'm going to build in. So it might seem like not exactly a seamless event, but I'm going to make this a layered kind of thing, which I think is in keeping with the poem itself. So I'll read you the first section. You may well recognize some of these opening lines, even if you didn't think you knew Walt Whitman in this poem. I celebrate myself and sing myself, and what I assume, you shall assume. For every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. I loaf and invite my soul. I lean and loaf at my ease, observing a spear of summer grass. My tongue, every atom of my blood, formed from this soil, this air, born here of parents born here, from parents the same, and their parents the same. I, now 37 years old, in perfect health, begin, hoping to cease not until death. Creeds and schools in abeyance, retiring back a while, sufficed at what they are, but never forgotten, I harbor for good or bad. I permit to speak at every hazard, nature without check with original energy. That's his opening. I invite you to reflect on that for a moment. What do you make of this as an opening to a poem that is Song of Myself? What do you notice about this self?
It's expansive.
Mm-hmm.
What's his line? I contain multitudes later on,
yep.
I think.
But yeah.
There's this sense of this, it's a self that has, in which there is a deep sense of kind of history, but then he's talking about like atoms, right? So it's got this kind of microscopic, macroscopic thing going on. So.
Yeah, this language of atoms intrigues me. I mean, it's sort of 1855 is
right.
Sort of early for thinking of
right.
of atoms in the scientific way. We think of atoms, of course, the word sort of means a small thing anyway.
And the last line that you read.
Nature without check with original energy.
Yeah.
What do you...
It's perfect for Holden, but it's just huge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just opening up completely.
Mm-hmm.
And sees himself a part of that. So.
Yeah. Without check, this sense of limitlessness, this sense of energy being unbounded, and the energy... It's part of the self, but is everything's energy, sort of.
And I keep seeing this great chain of being. And when I hear Adam, I hear Adam from the beginning. And I'm wondering, when The Origin of Species was written, I know it's around then. And I'm wondering,
2 years later.
2 years later. So it's someone, I'm just thinking, it's a great kind of, you know, dialogue almost with what they were thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe before, I guess it was before Darwin.
He's contemporary.
It was in the air, you know?
Yeah.
Just to think that.
Well, poem that the Adams made me think of is Lucretius on the Nature of Things, which was so beloved of so many Renaissance poets and supposedly is paid tribute by a whole tradition of, I mean, I don't know Whitman's religion. And he doesn't say he comes from the dust, he comes from the living things.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems he's making a distinction between common Christian biblical views and another way to look at where life resides.
Yeah. A number of the mid-19th century American, I guess, transcendentalists, romantic writers, had read such diverse things as the Bhagavad Gita. There's a language of cosmos in here that is an older language from non-Christian traditions. And it does seem to be a very immediate, in the living moment, not thinking of a hereafter or a hell or, you know, these other places for him. Yeah.
I don't remember the lines exactly. It's my first time hearing it, but he seems to suggest that there's no separation between himself and the others and make reference of the same fathers and mothers and things.
Yeah. There are a few other portions that I'll read that talk about those relationships with other people. I'll maybe use that as a segue into one of them. Before we leave this first section, one of the things that I notice that is important here is that this is a speaker who is loafing. This ability of leisure time to enable us to attach or to see connections, I think, is an important thing that, again, is kind of Holden-like. I guess I thought of this poem and thought of my coming to Holden, and it, you know, this is maybe a speaker who resonates, perhaps, with a certain kind of Holden mindset. But one of the things that's a feature of romantic poets, both British and American, figures like William Wordsworth, Samuel Taylor Coleridge, there is this emphasis or a centrality of quietness and reflection. You know, the world is a laboring world that they live in, and, you know, in 19th century America and the industrial nation that it is and is becoming, it's not necessarily celebratory of leisure time, not necessarily admiring or, you know, interested in just people hanging around not doing much. But some of the romantic writers were very interested in the ways in which quiet time in nature, in the grass, right? He is loafing and inviting his soul. He leans and loafs at his ease, observing a spear of summer grass. You know, just taking the time to attend to a tiny natural detail and to sit with that. You know, he's not exactly philosophizing about the grass. He's loafing, observing, just being sort of with it. And I don't know, summertime at Holden can feel busy and not very easeful sometimes either, even though we think of it as this place of retreat and rest. We can still get caught up with all the busyness here. But we certainly are in close proximity to these beautiful details of nature that I'm sure we all, even in a busy day between sessions, stop and look at the grass or the fawn or the mountain or just listen to the sound of the water for a moment. And these are, there is sacred opportunity for Whitman, for romantic writers, for us, in this quietness, in loafing, that I think is, dare I say, an anti-American stance to value loafing. But this is a particular kind of loafing. It's intentional loafing, right? It's focused loafing, perhaps.
There's an unjustified.
Exactly. I am going to loaf with a purpose. I'm not going to be intruded upon. Yeah.
Do you think the meaning of the word loafing has changed
in a century?
It's a really good question. The spelling has changed. It lost its E.
Okay.
But I am not sure. Leaning and loafing at my ease. That makes me curious, and I'll have to look it up. I'll report back.
So when you make bread, it has to sit to do its thing.
Oh,
it's loafing.
A loaf. A loaf of bread, it sits and grows.
Sit well.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting image.
Yeah.
Being
a
golden image to the bread thing.
Etymology. I love language.
That's great.
Let's see. What I thought I would do, there are several different things or categories of things that Whitman is interested in seeing relationships among. You know, he's got this, the atoms that belong to each of us equally that he's talking about here. In the next stanza, I think I'll read this one too, he talks about the air and the scent. So as I read this, I invite you to think about the air you're breathing that's going in and out, and perhaps think about smells of the flowers. There are lilacs up in front of my chalet that I noticed this morning as I was coming out, and the perfumes of the world, things he's thinking about here. Houses and rooms are full of perfumes. The shelves are crowded with perfumes. I breathe the fragrance myself and know it and like it. The distillation would intoxicate me also, but I shall not let it. The atmosphere is not a perfume. It has no taste of the distillation. It is odorless. It is for my mouth forever. I am in love with it. I will go to the bank by the wood and become undisguised and naked. I am mad for it to be in contact with me. The smoke of my own breath, echoes, ripples, buzzed whispers, love root, silk thread, crotch and vine, my respiration and inspiration, the beating of my heart, the passing of blood and air through my lungs, the sniff of green leaves and dry leaves, and of the shore and dark-colored sea rocks, and of hay in the barn. The sound of the belched words of my voice loosed to the eddies of the wind. A few light kisses, a few embraces, a reaching around of arms, the play of shine and shade on the trees as the supple boughs wag. The delight alone, or in the rush of the streets, or along the fields and hillsides, the feeling of health, the full noon trill, the song of me rising from bed and meeting the sun. Have you reckoned 1,000 acres much? Have you reckoned the earth much? Have you practiced so long to learn to read? Have you felt so proud to get at the meaning of poems? Stop this day and night with me, and you shall possess the origin of all poems. You shall possess the good of the earth and sun. There are millions of suns left. You shall no longer take things at second or third hand, nor look through the eyes of the dead, nor feed on the specters in books. You shall not look through my eyes either, nor take things from me. You shall listen to all sides and filter them from yourself. I want you to take a moment with your pieces of paper, if you will. And this is just a brainstorm. Either a scent that you remember, a moment. You know, sometimes fragrances catch us and bring us to certain memories. There's a fragrance from the day that you think of. Or perhaps take a few moments to respirate and inspirate and let your mind go soft a little bit and just write down whatever comes to mind. Whitman is saying, don't take it from me, don't take it from books. He's looking for what is within ourselves. So whatever odorless thing you go mad for, that you want to go to the bank and be with, you write a list of things, ideas, names, objects. It's free association. Before I ask you to share with me what you're on, you can let your thoughts linger there for a moment, finish a thought. I'm going to read a poem by a woman named Pat Maine Ellis. Do you remember, maybe what, 20 years ago or so, when scientists were sort of discovering that we are all made of stardust? Who remembers the stardust sort of new news? You're nodding.
Well, we discovered it recently in articles I've written.
This is a poem that came out of a response to quotations in a newspaper clipping on the subject of what scientists have learned about the relationship between stars and stardust and how many of our own atoms and cells are made up of star particles. The poem is titled, and this is in quotation marks, a quotation from the paper, "Scientists find universe awash in tiny diamonds, so small that trillions could rest on the head of a pin. But haven't we always known the shimmer of trees, the shaking of flames, every cloud lined with something? Clean water sings right to the belly, scouring us with its purity. It, too, is awash with diamonds. So small the trillions could rest on the head of a pin. It is not unwise, then, to say that the air is hung close with diamonds, that we breathe diamond, our lungs hoarding, exchanging, our blood sowing them rich and thick along every course it takes. Does this explain why some of us are so hard? Why some of us shine? Why we are all precious? That we are awash in creation, spumed with diamonds, shot through with beauty that survived the death of stars." This poem reminds me of Walt Whitman. Walt Whitman must have known that we are awash in diamonds, and this is part of his interest in feeling, you know, in such an immediate way, the taking in of air and the expiring of air, the belching out of our air as we speak, as I'm speaking here, right? So is anyone willing to share with me a little bit of just what you thought? Yes, please.
It isn't complete, but I'll go with it.
Yes, please.
"Lilies of Grass remind me of other life-changing, memorable titles. Lilies of the Field, A Raisin in the Sun, As Time Goes By, March of the Sugar Plum Fairies, Cat in the Hat, Wind in the Willows, titles of works that draw us in and take us back to special moments. Nighttime reading, bedtime stories, tales at the dinner table, Sunday drives."
That's lovely. Thank you. In the spirit of Whitman's catalog and encompassing things. Thanks. Anyone else at the moment? Or you maybe want to think out loud about what you started to jot down?
Well, I went with sound rather than scent.
Mm-hmm.
"Leaves singing, clock clapping above my head, compete with the crunch of gravel beneath my feet. My ears fill with the clack, clap, clacking that roars above, carried sound, wind playing the instrument of trees, symphonic, rapturous, rapping hip-hop, keeping time to something mountain-bound and river-splashing, fresh, misted breath."
Cool.
More of a tongue twister than I realized.
That's great.
As I was making a list of scents, I was going into my memory a lot. I can smell my grandmother and my other my grandma's house, and I can smell my husband's neck and the scent of my granddaughter after a bath. I mean, the
mm-hmm.
memory is just powerful.
Mm-hmm.
You can just go right there
mm-hmm.
to those places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. The relationship between our five senses and the experiences we have that are attached to them is quite intense at times. And sometimes we aren't even aware, you know, that our bodies are moving through this world, smelling things, seeing things, touching things, and to be brought back into some of those moments is a great gift.
These are very contextual, but I went with fresh pine scent
mm-hmm.
and was taken with how powerful and subtle it is when it's real. Because
mm-hmm.
so many times we get fake pine,
oh, yeah.
you know, when
mm-hmm.
we're not here. And it's a totally different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then a homemade bread baking.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
the warmth. In every way, the warmth.
Yeah. Yeah.
We both had pine and bread on our
plates. The genetic.
This place is infused.
I also get clean sheets in from the line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Air dried laundry, you know,
yeah.
the sheets are fresh.
Yeah. For me, one of the smells that is Holden is wood smoke from
mm-hmm.
all the,
yeah.
You know, the sauna smoke that's burning there. When we hiked up to Holden Lake on Sunday, Chris Schultz was trying to make a little fire at the edge of the water, and the smell of that smoke feels like Holden to me. I don't know, and when I realize that I'm inhaling that, you know, that it's moving through me into my lungs, into those pores, and that I'm having an exchange with that, it's a really interesting way of thinking about how one belongs to that smell or that place. Participating with the smells. Yes.
It's also interesting to me the way that smell not only takes us back, but smell also has like a sustaining power.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 4 years since I've returned to the village. And so there's a lot of people I don't know, there's some changes to the buildings, but the dining hall, like it smells the same. And so it's a way that it connects past and present. It is. Kind of, it's unchanging
yeah.
as everything else around changes.
Yeah. Yeah. This might seem out of order, but it is not. There's a method to my madness. I want for a moment for you to brainstorm for me a list and jot some things on the board of animal, vegetable, or mineral things that you feel most separate from, most different from. What are the things most not you out of the animal, vegetable, mineral world?
Bear claws, and I don't mean the kind you eat.
Cactus.
Okay.
Arsenic leaching out of the mine, Portland.
Oh.
Sulfur in the water.
Sorry?
The smell of sulfur.
Oh, uh-huh.
Slugs.
For some reason, I've been thinking about rocks all day.
Mm-hmm.
Rocks just seem foreign. I don't know.
Licorice.
Licorice? Few more.
Maggots.
Well, head lice.
I feel like we're on Fear Factor. Trying to come up with the creepiest things.
I think of exhaust from trucks or the boat or
mm-hmm.
that mm-hmm. feels like
diesel.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
Yeah, these are all sort of bad things, which is a kind of foreign thing, but foreign things aren't intrinsically bad either, right? things that are just different or other. I wonder if that draws any couple more ideas to mind.
Steel. Cedar trees.
Great cedars.
Birds in flight.
Ah.
Fire.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right, that should do for the moment. What I want you to mull over, just in glancing at that list, and I'm going to move on. We're doing a strange kind of brain multitasking. I don't really believe in multitasking in the way that our contemporary culture talks about it, but our minds do a certain kind of layering of work that sometimes feeds and informs itself. So I'm gonna do a couple things at once. I'm interested in you just kind of not really thinking explicitly, but just letting the back burner of your mind think about what you maybe have in common with one of the objects on this list that seemed like foreign things. Two other things. Never enough time. Here's where we'll go. The second sort of portion of Whitman's investment in relationships that I want us to talk about are relationships among different kinds of people. He's got all kinds of segments of this poem where he's thinking about the natural world, ways in which he is a part of, you know, the scent, the air, the grass, these things. But he is also very socially oriented. And so I want you also to think for a moment about a person or type of person that you feel most different from, or apart from, or separated from. If it helps you to jot down a brainstorming list. Maybe an uncomfortable thing to think about people we feel separated from or apart from or different from. Certainly for each of us there are kinds of people or types of people that feel not like, that feel foreign, and often foreign does feel negative rather than something positive. While you are thinking about that list, I'm going to read for you a few more segments from Whitman, where he's thinking about, again, the song of himself. And so think about the people on your list, and think about a couple of characters that crop up in these sections of Whitman's poems, and think about whether how Whitman is writing about these people can have any impact on you as you think about the people on your list, kinds of relationships we might have. Has anyone supposed it lucky to be born? I hasten to inform him or her it is just as lucky to die, and I know it. I pass death with the dying and birth with the new-washed babe, and am not contained between my hat and boots, and peruse manifold objects, no two alike, and every one good, the earth good and the stars good, and their adjuncts all good. I am not an earth, nor an adjunct of an earth. I am the mate and companion of people, all just as immortal and fathomless as myself. They do not know how immortal, but I know. Every kind for itself and its own, for me, mine, male and female, for me, those that have been boys and that love women, for me, the man that is proud and feels how it stings to be slighted, for me, the sweetheart and the old maid, for me, mothers and the mothers of mothers, For me, lips that have smiled, eyes that have shed tears. For me, children and the begetters of children. Undrape. You are not guilty to me, nor stale, nor discarded. I see through the broadcloth and gingham, whether or no, and am around, tenacious, acquisitive, tireless, and cannot be shaken away. This idea that he is tenacious and acquisitive of all types of people, that he can't, that you can't even let go of him somehow, I think is sort of a fascinating way that he is thinking about these groups. But I'm going to move on for a moment. I saw the marriage of the trapper in the open air in the far west. The bride was a red girl. Her father and his friends sat near, cross-legged, and smoking. They had moccasins to their feet and large, thick blankets hanging from their shoulders. On a bank lounged the trapper. He was dressed mostly in skins. His luxuriant beard and curls protected his neck. He held his bride by the hand. She had long eyelashes. Her head was bare. Her coarse, straight locks descended upon her voluptuous limbs and reached to her feet. The runaway slave came to my house and stopped outside. I heard his motions crackling the twigs of the woodpile. Through the swung half door of the kitchen, I saw him limpsy and weak, and went where he sat on a log, and led him in and assured him, and brought water and filled a tub for his sweated body and bruised feet, and gave him a room that entered from my own, and gave him some coarse, clean clothes. And I remember perfectly well his revolving eyes and his awkwardness, and I remember putting piastres on the galls of his neck and ankles. He stayed with me a week before he was recuperated and passed north. I had him sit next to me at table, my firelock leaned in the corner. Read this too. I can't stop reading Whitman. I've got my eye on the clock, and the next unit moves here. The Negro holds firmly the reins of his four horses. The block swags underneath on its tied-over chain. The Negro that drives the long gray of the stone yard, steady and tall, he stands poised on one leg on the string piece. His blue shirt exposes his ample neck and breast and loosens over his hip band. His glance is calm and commanding. He tosses the slouch of his hat away from his forehead. The sun falls on his crispy hair and mustache, falls on the black of his polished and perfect limbs. I behold the picturesque giant and love him, and I do not stop there. I go with his team also. In me, the caresser of life, wherever moving, backward as well as forward, to niches aside and junior bending, not a person or object missing, absorbing all to myself and for this song. Oxen that rattle the yoke and chain or halt in the leafy shade, what is that you express in your eyes? It seems to me more than all the print I have read in my life. What is it to absorb the others? This is Whitman's song of myself, and this self, you know, from the very start is this expansive energy.
Well, it makes me think of that quote, if you know a man's story, it's impossible to hate him. And so I think he really recognizes that people have this universal story. And maybe even the oxen, they're tired, and he's able to relate to that story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I hear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was this an underground railroad kind of encounter narration?
Not necessarily. Might have been. I mean, it's certainly an anecdote that I don't think that Whitman himself was part of an intentional one. But it strikes me as a very particular kind moment of hospitality that I'm sure strikes all of us as we think of Jesus washing the feet. It's also very akin to the Greek ritual of hospitality where you invite people in, you wash them, bathe them, feed them, and then you ask them their name. Mm-hmm. And not the other way around.
I'm fascinated with the separation of a speaker and his self, and he is just so able to just look above his own life and everyone else's life, so much so that he's almost not in it. He's almost not a part of that. He's definitely this transcendent speaker that's able to look above everything, enjoy his own life and his breathing and everything.
Yeah.
Just this awake awareness, hyper awareness.
Yeah.
This is so interesting.
I think that probably he himself would suggest that he is... It's maybe more metaphysical than transcendental, that it is sort of through the body and the being and the observing that the awareness is. But there is a section, just reminded me of a section, he talks a little bit about experiences, dates, discoveries, inventions, sickness of one of his parents or himself, the horrors of war, the fever of fitful news. These come to me days and nights and go from me again, but they are not the me myself. And he continues, apart from the pulling and hauling stands what I am, stands amused, complacent, compassionating, idle, unitary, looks down, is erect, or bends an arm on an impalpable certain rest, looking with side-curved head, curious what will come next, both in and out of the game, and watching and wondering at it. So it's a both and, for sure, that one can't really separate from oneself, but there is this observant self alongside or along with the experiencing self that is maybe the agent of seeing the relationships. The body is just mad with love. The riverbank with the air, following the cart of the people he observes. But then there is the observer also.
Doesn't it take you back to No Man Is an Island? I'm involved with mankind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that line about death being as beautiful as life, that's interesting. And it seems to be the key, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope to conclude in 5 minutes with one little section about death and life. Mm-hmm. Anyone want to talk a little bit more about this relationship with the other? You've heard from him, and you know, I invited you just to kind of brainstorm a little bit for yourselves about who for you feels like other. I mean, what would it feel like to follow the cart of that other, you know, someone on your list or a type of person on your list? Or if you were to imagine one of those types or specific people showing up at your door and you inviting them in and putting them up in the room next to yours.
One of the lines that struck me was that caresser of life.
Mm.
Very intimate. And then I think shortly after that there was a line about backwards and forwards, which is so helpful as an acceptance of kind of however it goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just going to go forward and or unidirectional, but backwards and forwards, try again, in a great application of caressing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was thinking of people who are really fixed in their thinking as the other, and then of course realizing I too am fixed in my thinking. But how to get a collaboration or a conversation when you have different points of view, you know, the religious right as an example, my stereotype of people fixed in their thinking is
mm-hmm.
as the one way, the true way, and we share a lot of a tradition, and we've come to different conclusions and different. So yeah, I mean,
mm-hmm.
that it's disturbing and difficult to think about how to engage in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, put my arms around that being
yeah.
as a fellow being on a journey, and
yeah.
and not get stuck in my own, you know. So.
Yeah, one of the things I noticed throughout this poem, you can access Song of Myself online, you can Google it,
yeah.
and up it will come. It's in the public domain and such, so I encourage you all to get your hands on it. It's 55 sort of half-page to page-long units itself. It's a little too long, for example, for me to have made copies to
okay.
hand out to everyone, but it's something that you will be able to find. But what the speaker here is doing over and over is just going with the people.
Right.
You know, there's seldom conversation.
Yeah.
You know, there's seldom a discussion about, in what ways are you different than me?
Yeah.
And, you know, he shows up at the wedding, he has a meal. It's that being or existing together in those kinds of
yeah.
companionating, compassionating. You know, he uses these
yeah.
interesting forms of words, forms of verbs to help us get at what that would feel like, that is somehow getting out of our heads and getting into a just way of being or a space
right.
with the other.
And it's interesting, you said the mind can do two things at once, and I think this poem is also, and I, when he said caressing back and forth, and then the oxen wheel, I do see a lot of circle images, or that feeling that he wants, or even a place at a wedding, this cycle, this wheel, of maybe looking at, like even if the person's different, they're on the opposite side of the wheel, there's just somehow that there's movement.
Mm-hmm.
And movement,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. There's something fascinating about, you know, I'm sure philosophers and theologians have, you know, attended to this poem and tried to parse, you know, what threads of ideas are going on in here. And I'm not sure that Whitman was a great studier or trying to write a poem in a particular tradition. There's a way in which the poem itself is just this sort of free-thinking approach to things. Somebody's watch is a minute and a half faster than mine. And if you'll indulge me as I read the last bit, you know, these are the kinds of exercises. If I were teaching this poem in a class, I would probably teach it over a week and spend some time on some exercises where we would write a little bit about, you know, sort of exploring ways that we feel connected to or attached to parts of the world. You know, in what way do I have anything in common with fire? You know, I don't know that I want to think about the slugs or the arsenic very well, but every atom belongs to everyone, and everything that's a part of us. So obviously we've just only kind of begun these little ideas of what you can do with your writing or your thinking, but I do hope that you'll explore the poem and let yourself think Whitmanly for a little bit this week. I will close by saying by a few excerpts here. Whitman writes, "I am of old and young, of the foolish as much as the wise, regardless of others, ever regardful of others, maternal as well as paternal, a child as well as a man, stuffed with the stuff that is coarse and stuffed with the stuff that is fine. One of the nations of many nations, the smallest the same and the largest the same. A southerner soon as a northerner, a planter nonchalant and hospitable, a Yankee bound by my own way, a Kentuckian walking the veil. I resist anything better than my own diversity. Breathe the air, but leave plenty after me. I am not stuck up, and am in my place. These are really the thoughts of all men in all ages and lands. They are not original with me. If they are not yours as much as mine, they are nothing, or next to nothing. If they are not the riddle and the untying of the riddle, they are nothing. If they are not just as close as they are distant, they are nothing. This is the grass that grows wherever the land is and the water is. This is the common air that bathes the globe, the air and grass that is common to us all. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.